the Almost Perfect Podcast.
Welcome to the Almost Perfect Podcast, a celebration of fuck-ups, failures, and falling flat on your face. This is a podcast that believes you can learn from experience, but that experience doesn't have to be your own. Ha, I'm Bob Perfect, and I'm a functional fuck-up. Let's learn from somebody else's mistakes. And today we're learning from Red Robin. Now, Red Robin, aka Ashley De Gea, I think De Gea, although she could be the G. She is the G, so you know. But yeah, Ash is a musician, and she is a phenomenal musician. She's got a wonderful voice, and she likes to, as she says in this interview, her goals these days are just to travel the world with her guitar, sing, and spread love. So that's her vibe, you know? Although it hasn't always been like that. Growing up, she wanted to be the next Britney Spears. And so we chat about that. We get into that in the beginning. We talk about, you know, the dreams that you have growing up. The dreams that you have when you don't really know what that kind of stuff actually entails. And we talk about how those dreams shift as they start to become a reality. As you start to achieve your goals, as you start to tick things off and start living your dream, that you start wanting more, that you start wanting different things, and that you start seeing, like I said, the realities of the dreams that you had before and how might not necessarily be, you know, what you thought they were. But yeah, Ash, aka Red Robin. Yeah, I've known her for a while now. I actually interviewed her a few years back and it never got published just because of some weirdness, some weird pettiness and stuff. But yeah, I'm really stoked that we managed to have this conversation. I hate that there were some connection issues. I think my connection or Ash's connection or both of our connections weren't great. And I've been doing these via Skype because of the new normal. And yeah, so that leads to its own challenges. And so this conversation, unfortunately, did have to be cut short. But I've tried to edit things so that you don't notice the connection issues too much. And you get a fantastic chat with a wonderful musician about her career. We don't really chat too much about Wentworth and stuff, but we kind of start around varsity time. We start at UKZN when it comes to when Ash was studying drama and then music and was a part of the Black Crystals alongside Jaden Daniel, who's been a guest on this podcast. You can go check that out. And a lot of other fantastic musicians. The Black Crystals were made quite an impact in the short time that they were around here in Durban. And now Ash has moved to Cape Town and she's joined the band World of Birds. And she's creating music as a solo musician as well. So she's Red Robin and she's a part of the World of Birds. So we chat about that. We chat about how to balance those two things, how to be a solo artist and to be a part of a band. And we also obviously get into the current situation. We take a look at how Ash has been navigating the pandemic and the lockdown and all of that, whether or not she's been creating new music, and those sorts of things. You know, we gotta chat about it. It's this ever-present fucking, I don't know, I want to say sort of Damocles, but I don't think that's accurate. I don't think I ever actually read that story, but I've definitely used that saying way too many times to not really know what it means. I know it's a sword hanging above your head, like by like a thin thread, and so I feel like that's what coronavirus is. I feel like that's what it is for a lot of us. So yeah, we chat about that. We chat about how it's impacted her life, how it's impacted her career, both, you know, for the positives and for the negatives, because that is something that for some of us is the reality. You know, there might actually be some positives to this time off. And obviously there's a lot of negatives because money is what makes the world go round, unfortunately, and a lot of us can't make money at the moment. And I saw that's why there was this slight essay read thing the other day, and at first I wasn't, like, I saw some people being like, yo, we need to, you know, we need to open up, the government needs to let us, if you know, taxis can operate at full capacity, then why can't tourism operate at full capacity? And I saw stuff like that, and I was just like, personally, as a live performer, And as someone who's gotten more and more into debt every single month since lockdown started, well, I thought it was going to be like 2 months, and I had my savings, and now I don't have my savings. Now I've got debt. So, yeah, as someone who's in that situation and is also a live performer, the last fucking thing in the world I want is to get on a stage right now. I mean, no, that's what I want. Like, I actually really want that, man. I would love to get on a stage and tell jokes and make people laugh and all of us have a good time and have a drink at the bar afterwards and, yeah, have a couple shots of tequila, get an Uber home, and then wake up the next day with a headache. Like, that's my dream right now. Like, I would love that. But I also understand that given the current circumstances, that just can't happen. And it frustrates me a little bit to see people just wanting to risk, you know, other people's lives, really. Their lives too, maybe. But when I see people talking about, you know, the jobs and stuff like that, of, you know, their staff and those sorts of things, that's what I think is more, yeah, the staff don't have a way to earn money at the moment, and we definitely need some sort of government intervention, but I don't think that's going to happen, so we need to try to figure out some sort of other plan, I guess, you know, some sort of community funds, some sort of online stuff. I know Daniel Kitson is busy doing a tour of empty theaters that he's selling tickets for to the capacity of each venue, and then I think, yeah, he's giving the venue either all the money or quite a lot of it. So, you know, there's stuff like that that people can do, but like I was saying, it's interesting to me to a degree, like when people are wanting, you know, businesses to go back to normal in some regards, and, you know, the people on the front lines are definitely some of the people who are suffering the most at the moment, you know, the people who don't have work, who don't even have the option of getting into debt, you know? Those are the people who are going to be the ones who are in danger of contacting COVID if things had to open up more, you know? If we had to allow for, I don't know, just more people to be a part of conferences and things like that. And I get it, man. I get that a lot of people are suffering, a lot of businesses are suffering, and I don't have solutions at all with regards to that. I mean, I think we just need to look realistically at what's happening. You know, it's a fucking deadly virus, and you might not think it's that deadly because you're young and healthy and don't have these other things, but I've got a grand, you know. I don't know if you've got a grand, but I assume you might. I assume most of us have grands, you know. Most of us have grandparents. Most of us know people with fucking diabetes. Most of us know people who have HIV, who, you know, have different, yeah, things that could impact this. And personally, I don't want them to fucking die, obviously. Like, it makes no sense to me to try and put them in danger. But I do get the other side of things. I do get the depression. I do get the lack of finances. I do get how all of that impacts things as well. I just don't know, you know, when it comes to a global pandemic, how much can necessarily really be done, or what's the correct things to do? I just know that getting people together in confined spaces is not ideal at the moment. So if you're advocating for that, I'm against that. If you're one of those people who was like, yo, we need to chat to the government, we need them to offer us some support, I'm with you there, man. I support that. I'm cool with that. I'm down, but I think it's going to fall on deaf ears, unfortunately. And I also, like I say, I don't feel that much solidarity with some of the people, I guess, involved in this stuff. Like, I don't know who these people are. Like, I don't know if they're representing me or not, you know? And that, I guess, is a lot. Like, there's so many questions. There's so many questions to ask when it comes to this. But I'm not a hater entirely. I do have just concerns and some comments, I guess. but yeah, other than that, I've had a pretty interesting week, I guess. It started with Paige and I coming across a young woman who needed some assistance, And that led to us becoming accustomed, or not accustomed, or just seeing with our own eyes the lack of social services, or the underfunding, I guess, of social services in this city and in this country, and the real life effects of that. So personally, I have just been trying to think more about ways to have a real world impact, and not just argue about shit online and just, like, I don't know, bring attention to things. Because while bringing attention to things is obviously necessary, action is also, and like, it's more necessary, I think. We need to, like, the concept of each one teach one is the same thing with just, like, you know, help who you can, where you can, like, just, yeah, do what you can to make the world a better place. And so that's a lot of stuff that's been going on in my head lately. And I guess I'll come to you guys if I have any ideas. And obviously, with regards to this podcast, we support Sasonke, which is an organization that is by sex workers, for sex workers, and is looking to decriminalize sex in South Africa. But I also highly recommend, if you do have some cash, to donate it at the moment. You know, if you've got any spare money, send it to children's homes, send it to gender-based violence places. You know, it is Women's Month, if that's, like, whatever that fucking means these days. But, yeah, just fucking, if you can't spend the time to help others, then you're probably making some money. So then maybe you can give that money to people who are doing the thing. I don't know. Was that a little preachy? I'm sorry. Sorry if it was. It's just, it's been an interesting week, and I guess, you know, things are completely fucked in Zimbabwe, and I don't even know where to begin with that. There's the whole Beirut situation. America's just what it is, you know, like, fuck, what, it's just a surreal, everything is what it is, you know, but at the same time, we can do a lot around us to make it better, because if you look at, you know, the history of humanity, we've always made it through shitty times, you know? We just have. That's all we've done. We've always fucking overcome shit. We've always managed to find a way. And we will keep doing it. But it is going to be tough. And it does, I think, require individual action more than asking the government to do it for you, I guess. Like, I guess that's just where I'm at. Like, at the moment, it's more just about how do we connect with our communities? How do we connect with our communities? How do we make the world a better place just, like, one person at a time, rather than, yeah, busy trying to be like, the government needs to help everyone, because they fucking can't. They're just too inept and too corrupt to be able to do it. And you know that, I know that, we all fucking know that. We know the fucking situation, so... Yeah, the sooner we can actually get together, I think the sooner we can make things happen. Hopefully, you know, we can turn things around. But it is dark. The days are dark. Friends are few. All of that shit. But we'll get through it. Anyway, cool. So this is a listener-supported podcast. All of that was brought to you. Or everything I said so far was brought to you. By you, the listener, through patreon.com/almostperfect. Now, this is a platform. I'm sure you've heard of Patreon by now. You're probably youngish. I don't know. Like, I wonder if Ashley's parents are listening to this now and has just gone, what the hell is this guy on about? But I'm assuming you're probably a millennial and you probably know what patreon.com is, but you can go over there. And there's different tiers where you can be a part of the podcast in various ways. You can suggest guests, you can ask questions, you can get early access to content on almostperfect.co.za, and you can become a part of this very podcast. You can become a part of the cast and crew and get a shout out each and every single week by being a part of the titular titles tier. Now, this is a $10 tier that gets you a title on this very podcast, a title of your choosing. So first up, we have got Karan Slemon, who is the Almost Perfect Youth Group Leader. Shout outs to Karan. We've got next up the Chief Sales Officer of Subtle Heresies in the Greater Overberg Region. It is Rousseau. And then we have got the one and only King Julian. And lastly, and least importantly, it is the Executive Producer, Stephen Olafia. So shout outs to all of you. Greatly appreciated. And shout outs to everyone who supports the podcast over on patreon.com/almostperfect. You can also just chip in a few shekels by heading to almostperfect.co.za and you'll see there's a little QR code there. Just scan that thing and there'll be ways for you to just go, hey Bob, here's some money. And that would be greatly fucking appreciated. Alternatively, if you want something for your money, I've got mugs, man. I can sell you a mug. I can mug you. Yes, you can get an Almost Perfect mug for 100 Rand. 10 Rand from each mug sale goes to Sasonke, that organization I mentioned that is working to decriminalize sex work in South Africa. And delivery, we can do postnet. It's 100 Rand. If you would like a mug, hit me up. bob@almostperfect.co.za. I think that's all I need to say to you for now. Thank you for listening this far. It's about to get good though. Here comes the Almost Perfect podcast with Red Robin. So how are you living, Ash?
Bob, I'm living in such a polarized world right now. One minute I love everything about my life and the next day I hate everything about my life.
You know, that's a little bit relatable. I'm not going to lie to you. I kind of get what you mean.
Oh my gosh, it's crazy. I mean, it's like, I don't even know if it's due to the pandemic or if I'm just a crazy person sometimes. I'm not even sure.
You see, I think all of our craziness has definitely come to the forefront a lot more. A lot of us have had to confront ourselves and have internal dialogues that we're probably putting off for a while. At least I know I did. Like, I know the isolation has had me having a lot of conversations with myself.
Yeah, 100%. I think you're so right. It's definitely surfaced all of my anxieties that I definitely, like, was not 100% ready to face. So I guess that's the ups and downs of, like, one day you're dealing with it well, and then the next day it's like, oh, I can't actually take all of seeing all of my demons at once.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, seeing all of your demons at once. I've definitely had some days like that throughout this where it's just be like, everything seems overwhelming. And then there's other days where it's like, I totally feel like completely blessed and feel like such an idiot for like these things. But you can't beat yourself up for like feeling what you feel, you know? It's an overwhelming situation that we are in.
Yeah, 100%. You have to sort of just, I listened to a podcast that said like, you have to go through the 5 stages of grieving and you have to like grieve the loss of normality or like the loss of life as we knew it. And I think most people are just like pushing past, like not sitting with how they're actually feeling about everything. So I've been trying to do that.
But how have you been feeling creatively with regards to this? Because I see you've been releasing music, but is this music you've created from before now, or has this actually been a somewhat productive period for you in terms of music?
Yeah, so I went into lockdown feeling like I was going to do my best to be creative and to make all of this music. I had so much music sitting in my voice recorder like that I could work on, or I could sit and make new music, but I had zero creativity throughout lockdown. Like, I did try my best, but I got to a point where I was like, okay, well, I have all this music that I can release that's just sitting. Let me just release that, keep the train going. But I sort of just took a break from making music and was just like reading and working on my PR and on other aspects of my business now as I see it. I've become quite business-minded in the last year in terms of my career, which I wasn't before. So I had lots of things to work on aside from the actual music, which wasn't intentional. I didn't want to take a break from being creative.
Yeah.
Just so overwhelmed by life that I didn't have anything to say. I was just like sort of pushed into a corner. I didn't feel like really playing my guitar or writing music. So I just sort of gave myself a break from it, I guess.
That's cool. I mean, I've kind of done that with comedy. I mean, I see some people are trying to do comedy shows and stuff like that, and respect to them, but only now I've actually thought, like, hey, there's one or two things I could do with the online format that I want to do. But for the last 4 months, 5 months, I don't know how long it's even been, but I've just been trying to focus on other aspects as well. Like, I created the Almost Perfect website, and like, I've been pursuing script writing and doing various other things because, I mean, the platform to, do comedy is very different now. And it's the same thing, I think, for you guys. It's like, when you're creating music, knowing that, cool, I'm going to put this out, I'm going to tour it, going to get to play it, it feels different. And it's the same thing now with writing jokes for me. It's like, without knowing that, cool, tomorrow night I'm going to go test this joke out, I have like less incentive almost. And like, if like when I do sit down to try and write stuff like that, it just doesn't come out. But I'm grateful that I do have other avenues to explore. And I feel like you're probably in a similar situation where it's like, okay, cool, I can't do this thing. What can I do?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I can't even imagine trying to come up with jokes in the tough time. I mean, there probably is so much material now, though, if you think about it. I don't know.
Yeah, the problem I have is just everything about life these days is so absurd that it's hard to like make it funnier. It's just like the reality has just become so crazy that it's just like, what do I even say now? Like, how do I normalize this? How do I make this okay?
I know. Yeah, I mean, I saw a post yesterday. Someone said, "Is it just me and Kanye that's losing our minds, or it everybody else too?" And I was like, "You're relatable," because it's like you don't even like. People were saying in this one group I was in, they're like, "Oh, why don't you make songs about 2020 and make songs about how you feel right now?" And I was like, "Dude, I don't even know how I feel right now. Like, I can't even begin to
Yeah.
pen anything that like properly describes the roller coaster of 2020." So, I mean, yeah, it is nice to have other things that you can fix your attention on, but there is kind of like a gap or space that I feel like is missing that I wish I could have like filled. I don't know.
Yeah, sure, I can imagine. Let's think back to happier times. We've dwelled on the present a bit too much. Let's go back to the beginning of you. Where are you originally from? How's your family? What's your origin story?
My origin story, it depends which one I have told. Let me try and remember. Yeah, I don't know. I always knew that I was gonna be a singer from like really young. My people asked me, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" I wanted to be a singer. I wanted to be just like Britney Spears, actually. That was
Hey,
my
didn't we all?
Britney, hit me, baby, one more time. That
Trust me,
was
I danced to that, and the Toxic video were very influential in my life.
You see, these
Probably for
iconic
slightly different reasons than for girls, but yeah.
things. No, but yeah, I mean, I wanted to be Britney Spears, and my family was very musical. My granddad was also in a band when he was growing up. He was the lead singer of his band, and my dad also played the piano. My mom sang at church, so I grew up in a very musical family. And then after school, my parents basically said to me, like, if you want to pursue this music and drama thing, you're gonna have to study it because like you need a paper to your name, basically. They were like, you can't just go into the world with no like backup plan. So they were like, you can teach music. If you're not gonna make it in the industry, then eventually you can teach. So I went and studied at UKZN, and I did a BA music and drama. And then I started a honors in drama and performance, and then I ended up switching it over to music, and then I ended up finishing a honors in music. So, yeah, and
I
then
remember though when you were studying, weren't you were doing a research paper on colored identity and stuff. Wasn't that a part of it? Or I just remember we did an interview a few years back that never got published, and that was something that came up then.
I mean, at that time, sorry, I was very interested in colored identity, and I'd been having conversations with some friends of mine. Jerome Stoffels is a photographer, and Lauren
Yeah,
Sokol, who
Jerome. Got to get both of them on this podcast at some point. I
Yeah.
love both of their work, but yeah, sorry,
Yeah.
carry on.
They're both quite influential in that conversation, and I've been speaking to them about maybe doing a documentary. I think I was just very passionate at that time about just uncovering some of the truths about colored identity. And I was more focused on drama at that point and South African theater and performance art and that sort of thing. And somewhere along the line of doing my honors and writing that research paper, I got very distracted and sort of lost my way and started smoking a lot of weed. And I just wasn't going to class. And I ended up dropping out of my honors year in 2016.
Were you creating music at the time then, or was that an uncreative period? Because I know when we chatted, when we did that interview, it was for that song with Snapback called Noise, and that was kind of like your first song back after a while of not creating music. So was this around the same time or before
No,
that?
this was like maybe about a year after that.
After that, okay. So
So
you're creating music.
I was definitely creating music at that point. It was sort of like the peak of the Black Krystals vibe. I was making music with DJs and producers and working with Sean, and I had the song with Snapback. I'm trying to think who else I would have worked with at that time. And
Anything
TaylorMade.
with
TaylorMade.
yes.
Yeah, so I had like some electronic vibes on SoundCloud. I hadn't released anything like on iTunes or Spotify or anything. It was all very underground. But I was making music at that time, and we were touring a little bit with Black Krystals. But I just got very distracted from my studies, and I sort of just fell off the bandwagon with that and a
How
lot
do you
of weed.
feel about that? Like that you fell off with your studies? Like, do you regret it, or is it just a part of life?
Oh man, I don't regret it because it taught me a valuable life lesson of like, if you're not going to put in the time, you're not going to just get the degree. Because I think in my undergrad, I sort of just skated by and I got good marks because it was easy for me to just read and regurgitate information. And then I realized that like if you're not going to put in the time and like actually study and do this research paper, you're not going to just get this degree, for free. So I think I grew up a lot in this space. And also I ended up changing my major from drama to music, and I'm very interested now in the field that I started to study in and hoping to do my master's next year. So I think it all worked out for the best in any case. So I
So it's
don't
just
have any regrets.
part of the journey there. So you keep bringing up Black Krystals. Some people might not even know what that is, Not everyone knows who you are who's listening to this podcast,
Yeah,
Ash.
yeah.
So who are the Black Krystals? How do you get involved with them?
So the Black Krystals were a band that I was part of when I was at university, and it was started by my best friend and boyfriend at the time, Jaden Daniel, who's like a jazz pianist. And it consisted of, I think there were nine of us at one stage. Yeah, there were nine of us. It was like a jazz fusion, neo soul band, and all the music
With the
was written by
hip-hop.
Jaden. A little bit of hip hop, yeah, a bit of hip hop. Seth and Dada were the two rappers, and Vicky and I were the two vocalists. Victoria Raw, and yeah, we toured to Cape Town and Mozambique, and we had a good stint. I think it was about 2 years, 3 years that we were together.
What was that experience like though? Because that was like your first like kind of band, right? Outside of, you mentioned that you were involved in music in church, right? And then after
Yeah.
that, so this was like your first like secular musical project, if I'm right.
Yeah, you're right. It 100% was my
So
first.
what was that difference like, going from singing in the church to now going on tour with, a band of very different individuals? Like everyone in that band's quite unique.
Yeah, it was crazy because I think I was looking for a place to fit in, and I think everybody goes through that at that age, like 21, 20, 22. I was just like really trying to find my place in the world and trying to find a group of friends to fit in with, and I found that with Black Krystals that really, I think everybody had that feeling if they were involved with Black Krystals, that it sort of gave you like a home where your craziness and your creativity was accepted, and like we all had quirks and we were all like unafraid to show them in that space. So it was really a space that I felt comfortable to be myself in, but it also comes with its like I didn't have any self-control, so everybody in that band, almost everybody, smoked weed, and we'd smoke before we went on stage, we'd smoke after we came off stage, a lot of alcohol involved as well. And I think if you're somebody that's not very grounded and you don't really have like boundaries, you can get very swept away. And I think that's what happened to me, because I just didn't have any self-control and I wasn't in a good place mentally. So while it was like all the best things, it was also at the same time some of the worst things for me at the time.
You are just making me flashback to my 20s so hard. Like, because that just describes so much of, yeah, like what I went through, and not even like with a band, but just in general, you know, so much of it is that. It's the partying lifestyle. It's the, for me, it was a bit of drugs and stuff like that as well. And, you know, you're still just having the best time because you're with friends, you're with people who understand you, you're being creative, you're doing cool things. But at the same time, you're not necessarily secure because, yeah, like you're still young, you still don't really know what you're doing.
No.
And so that can lead to some, like, because that's also the thing. It's like you're now in a band. The band's getting pretty popular. People like it. You're getting, you know, a bit of money. You get free booze a lot of the time from the situation. Yeah. So it is just like this whole thing of, you know, oh my God, are we doing it? Like, is this the life? But then at the same time, you're like, you see the reality of it, and you're like, shit, like, are we ever going to actually make it? You know, I don't know. That's just what I would imagine.
Yeah, no, 100%. But I think we were also very oblivious to, like, reality. We had a very, especially Jaden and I, we kind of lived in a bubble where we're like, no, we're going to be superstars, like, everything's going to work out. And we just had very, like,
need that though.
Yeah, I think you do. You need that to a certain extent. You need to be a dreamer to be able to exist in the music industry. I think you have to have big dreams, and then sometimes reality hits and you're like, oh, okay, it's not exactly what I thought it should be, but it's still like the journey of having that dream and just imagining those things sometimes is the joy in itself. I don't know.
And you are kind of living the dream. I mean, you might not be Britney Spears yet, but like you are, you know, a working musician. You've got fans. You create dope music. You now with World of Bird. Like, aren't you living the dream?
Yeah, I mean, to some extent, I am living the dream. But I think just as human beings, we never like fully content.
You always want more.
Yeah, you always want more. There's always something you feel like you could be doing better, or it's always more popularity, or there's more fame, or there's more fans you could have, or there's better song you could make. So
right now,
yeah, bigger stages, more festivals, like there's always more. So I feel like I definitely am living my dream 5 years ago. Like 5 years ago, I was dreaming about the things that I've been able to do in the last 5 years. So I think it's always just about measuring your growth and then learning from it and moving forward. I think there's always a bigger dream, like your dream always grows with you.
Yeah, no, that's actually really good advice. And like my dreams have, I've got so many like ideas of like possibilities of what could happen and that I would like to go towards, and that's kind of just like how I've always lived my life, you know. It's like I'm realistic in what's possible, but I've also realistic in what's possible, you know. It's like I've also seen what's possible, I've also done like really cool and fun things. So it's like the more you do stuff, the more you go, oh, I could actually do that, or I could actually do that. And you don't even know, like, you know, like especially I guess as a musician, you might, you know, at first think like, oh, I want to travel the world, you know, as Britney Spears, and you've got all these dancers and stuff like that behind you. But now you go, wow, I could actually travel the world just doing the festival circuits and meet up with all these cool other musicians around the world, like as part of this community that's just touring and sharing music. And like, you're not this superstar on like, you know, this global scale, but you're still traveling the world. You're still a part of, it's even more special, and it's even like got more connection to it than the isolating world, I guess, of someone like Brittany.
Yeah, I mean, I think your desires change as you get older as well, and like the curtain almost is pulled away, and you start to realize that maybe what you wanted is not what is going to be good for you or what you need. So I definitely have come to terms with the fact that being Britney Spears is maybe not going to be the best thing for me, or maybe it's not going to be what I want. It's like, I mean, when you're famous, you can't even go to the grocery store without people asking you to take pictures. Like, you start to ask yourself these real questions, like, is that really what I want? And then you realize that actually the thing that you love, or the thing that I love, is making music and connecting with people. So on some level, like, I feel like I'm already successful, or I've already reached a goal, my goals, to a certain extent, because it's about people for me. It's about connecting with people and inspiring their lives, and your songs becoming part of their lives. Whether it's a million people or 50 people, it's all the same to me.
I'm so with you there. Like, even just with this podcast, like, that's kind of the whole thing. It's just, it's about, yeah, reaching out and connecting with people and sharing stories and hopefully inspiring others, you know, to go like, hey, this is how it's done. This is how I can do it. So this is just giving people different perspectives, you know, and it doesn't matter that, you know, like, some people like Marc Maron or Joe Rogan, you know, Joe Rogan getting his millions and stuff like that. And there's me, you know, trying to like scrape out a living, like, you know, just pay my rent here in Glenwood. I don't really care, like, that there's this huge disparity between us, because people often tell me how much, you know, this impacts their lives and how much they enjoy it. And like, I enjoy doing it. So all around, what a cool experience. And I feel like making music is probably like that for you, where it's just like, yes, you play and people are singing along in the front row. Like, I know, because I see people singing along in the front row at your shows, you know. So it's like, and people are passionate about you and passionate about your music. How does that actually feel sometimes? It must be a little weird, right?
Yeah, it is a little weird, and I kind of shut it out because I'm always so afraid of getting like a God complex or feeling like superior in any way. Like, I always am trying my best to stay like humble and not get a big head, because it's so easy to get a big head when people are like, I love you, like sending you DMs about how your music is like part of their lives. So I don't know, it's just, I don't really think about it that much, but at the same time, I'm also like super grateful and appreciative that there are people that connect with my music, because that it makes it worth it at the end of the day. Because I mean, you make music for the response. Some people are like, oh, I make music for myself, like, and I get that, that's cool. But for me, I want to see a response. I want to see somebody cry or somebody laugh, or that's the reward for me, is seeing like a response from somebody for a song that I've written.
Yeah, it's literally the same thing with jokes. If that's all you ever want out of a joke is a response, like, it's when you don't get a response, it's that your whole world starts crumbling around you. So I get that. As an artist, for me, it's like my entire career is kind of based off that thing of like putting something out there and getting a response from other people. It's just, I guess for you, it's just a whole different experience, because it's not necessarily as immediate. Like, you'll sing a song and be lost in your own world whilst you've got, you know, 1,000 people in front of you at a music festival. What is that actually like sometimes? Are you like aware of them when, you know, you're singing and you're playing and like, or are, like, that's like, yeah, are you in your own head there, or are you fully aware that you've got all these people and you can't fuck up?
It's kind of like dichotomy of having this thing in your mind, like, are there people watching me? But I always try my best to run away from that and go into my own world, because that's when I give the best performance. So it's a constant battle when I'm on stage of like knowing that I'm in front of people, but not allowing that to cause me to make decisions, because I'm aware that I'm in front of people. It's very weird. But a lot of the time it's all about the vibe and like the pre-show vibes. Like, if there's a bad vibe or like I don't feel good going onto stage, generally it's a weird performance and I'm very aware of the audience and it like messes up my whole vibe. But when it's a good show, then you just feel good energy going on, and I'm able to just like slip into my own world, be present on stage with the connection with the musicians on stage, and then it's sort of like that's when I give my best performance, is when I can, in my mind's eye, sort of just go into like a channeling space where I'm just channeling like these feelings. But yeah, I guess that explains it.
It does. How are you managing the solo life and the band life now? Because I am correct in saying you have joined World of Bird now. They were a three-piece band, and now I see you doing stuff with them.
Yeah, it is hard. I didn't think it was going to be this hard. I think I just had a... I wanted to do more and to take on more, because I felt like my solo career in Durban, I felt like I had done everything I could do in Durban. And it sort of happened at a time where I was wanting to expand. I was wanting to move maybe to Cape Town or Joburg to sort of spread my wings a bit. And at the same time that I was thinking of doing that, well, the Birds had approached me and asked if I would join the band. And I loved being with them and loved being on tour with them and loved making music with them. So it just seemed like the right opportunity at the right time.
Well, how did you guys meet? How did that all come about?
We actually met through Sean Ross. So Sean Ross was friends
with me. Old Miss You.
Yeah, Old Miss You. Yeah, Miss You. He introduced me to Nick and the World of Birds when we were on tour there for a Red Robin project. We went to Cape Town to play some shows for Red Robin and to go to the Red Bull studio. And then World of Birds were playing a show and needed someone to open for them. So Sean suggested that I open for them, and that's how we met, and then we just sort of kept in touch. And then I started making music with the producer from World of Birds, Ben McCarthy. And that's how the relationship, I guess, sort of developed. And out of that came 2020, which was the first song we collaborated on. From there, we just like kept collaborating. So it was sort of like an organic thing for them to be like, would you join the band? And yeah, I guess the rest is history.
I remember 2020 to be a fairly upbeat song, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it is.
How do you feel about that now?
It's funny because the lyrics of 2020 are quite, they're like premonition lyrics. 2020, you might miss me. So, yeah, we didn't know we were writing a premonition song. I mean, the vibe is upbeat. It's like, all I want is all I've got. But... Yeah. Yeah, I mean, who knew that 2020 was going to be this? We all were like, 2020 is going to be our year.
Especially after 2019. Like, it was just like, it can't get worse. Like,
yeah. I know. It was like, yo, 2020 is definitely going to be great. So, yeah, I didn't imagine moving to Cape Town and a global pandemic setting in at all.
How has the move to Cape Town been? When did you move down? And why did you pick Cape Town? Was it because of World of Birds, or had you decided to move down there before that?
Yeah, so I had been up and down to Cape Town because of World of Birds from July 2019. So I guess the Cape Town bug had bitten me way earlier. In September, I went and stayed there for a month, and I was working on a project with Ben McCarthy from World of Birds. I think by September, after spending a month there, I was like, I love Cape Town. I want to move to Cape Town. So I had already started looking at flats and thinking about moving and saving money. So it's about September, November, I made the decision that I was going to move, or I was thinking of moving. And then by end of November, World of Birds asked me to join the band. So it sort of like went hand in hand. And yeah, I mean, so I moved
That's
down
good
in
timing.
January. Yeah, good timing. And it was so nice to have that support system. Usually when you move to a new city or a new place and you don't have anybody around you, it can be very difficult. But I was very grateful to have that support system. And Sean had also moved around the same time. So it just felt like the right time.
Yeah, and you two have also been creating quite a bit of music together over the years. How do you guys know each other? And like, how's your relationship?
It's strange because I don't remember meeting Sean. Like, neither of us have a recollection of meeting.
Those are the best situations.
Yeah, 100%. It's like, so we were just obviously meant to know each other. So we don't really know how we met. But we started making music, I think, in 2015. And Stare was our first release that we did together. And then we did Colors with John T. And then came Dilemma. Trey Flips. And then Dilemma was off of Sean's EP, Education. Yeah, and then we just kept making music from there. And then we released You and Me this year. We took a long break, but we're friends and music partners. So I guess we're always in conversation when it comes to making music.
Like, what's the process like between you two?
It's different for different songs. Like, sometimes he'll send me a song that's like fully produced and just needs lyrics. And then I'll sit with it and come up with some sort of melody and lyrics to go with it. And then sometimes for my own stuff that Sean produces, often for the Red Robin stuff, I'll maybe sit on my laptop and come up with like a shell of a song that has like lyrics and guitar and maybe a bass drum, and then he'll like sort of finish it off for me. So it all depends like what the end goal is, but Sean's definitely the producer. Sometimes try to wear the hat, but it's so hard. It's not easy. It's definitely a special gift, that producer hat. But Sean's really talented in a sense where he's able to like give me melodies as well. And I think we just sort of feed off of each other when it comes to like working together.
Yeah, your music together does sound quite fluid. So that's why I was just wondering about what the process is like between you. What do you prefer? Have you just learned to enjoy both sides of that, you know, coin, where someone just gives you a song and says, hey, do you mind featuring on here? Or the process of obviously making things together. I guess there's pros and cons to both.
I used to really enjoy people just sending me beats. Like TaylorMade would send me a pack of like 10 beats and I could just pick one that speaks to me and like write whatever I felt went over it. But as I've grown in my songwriting, I enjoy more like sitting and writing a song from scratch with someone. And I don't really like anymore like someone just giving me a finished song, because then I feel like I miss out on the creative process, because then you've got this song already that all it's missing is the color. It's like you just got to color in this already like drawn picture, which is not as fun for me. I kind of like drawing the lines and coming up with concepts and sounds and all of that stuff.
It's such a cool way to put it, actually. I'm busy thinking of a film called Chasing Amy. It's with Kevin Smith, where they make fun of the one guy because he's an inker for comic books. And it's just like, you're tracing, because that's literally what his job does. Another guy does the drawings, and then the inker goes over. And like, it is an important job, a very important job in comics. And I wouldn't ever disparage anyone who does it, but it's just, you're just reminding me of that. Of just like, you're a tracer. you're busy saying like, yeah, you're kind of like, when you get that. But I guess like, that's kind of work in a way. Like, you know, that's where it's more like, you know, it's a job versus it's artistic thing.
Exactly. I think that's why I don't like it so much anymore. It's like, I don't know, it just sort of feels like work, and I don't like it when music feels like work to me, because the reason I've got into music is because I enjoy it so much. But lately I've just been feeling like when I have to write over a finished beat, it feels like work. It doesn't feel like my opinion is valued that much. I mean, there are times where like Sean will send me something and I'll be like, whoa, this is crazy. Like, I have to write something on this. But a lot of time, like...
But then that is, you know, it's inspired you. So it is a part of the creative thing. That's not work. It's not the same thing as like someone sending you a beat saying, hey, please, can you write on this?
Yeah. I don't know. It's a hard thing. I guess it's kind of has to be the right song at the right time.
Cool. I mean, that's an interesting to think about, because that stuff I don't, you know, necessarily think about that often. But we were saying just now, well, we got into this. We're talking about just the difference between working with a band and then also trying to create for yourself. So how are you managing that? Well, how have you been managing that before this?
I had always been independent and like just managed myself. But I found this year that I needed somebody to manage me. So from about 3 months ago, I got a manager, Melissa, and then it's made it easier for me then to just separate things. And then I schedule time like to focus on Red Robin stuff. And then obviously we're not able to play that many shows, but in terms of like World of Birds writing new stuff or like scheduling marketing campaigns or whatever for our new stuff that's coming out. So it's become very like down to scheduling and just being like, okay, allocating this amount of time to Red Robin and growing that and releases and whatnot and scheduling time for the World of Birds. I think it would have been way more difficult if we were still playing shows, because it got to a point where I had to be like, okay, I can't play this Red Robin show because it's a World of Birds show, or, you know, just trying to work around double booking. But for now, yeah, it's just about scheduling and giving the right amount of time to each thing and making sure that I'm reaching the goals that I set for each thing, I guess.
Yeah, I get that. Although that's not a bad problem to have, like to have to go like, oh, which gig do I take?
Yeah, no, it's not a bad problem. It's just about...
Shit, you're breaking up again there.
Rainy today, maybe that's why.
Yeah, it's almost definitely that. It's cool. I'll edit a lot of the like poor connection stuff out, and people also understand that the new normal is not that normal, unfortunately. But yeah, what are your days like these days? Like how have you been spending your time?
So I went through a phase where I scheduled everything very strictly. And I would like wake up at a certain time, go for a run, come back, make breakfast, answer email.
I've had those days.
Yeah. And then it lasts for like 3 days. And then I fall off the bandwagon.
I've read that book, Atomic Habits. And like, I always try and do stuff from it. And like, some of it sticks. It's never actually like, you know, you're going to do the thing like that the book tells you to do and just do it forever, you know? It's like, even for me, like with exercise and stuff like that, I'm so grateful because I've got the Nike Training Club app, and like I have to exercise at least once a week so I can get my streak. But some weeks, you know, it's like I'll exercise 7 times in the week, and other weeks it's literally just like that once, you know?
Yeah.
But it definitely helps like having some sort of thing to track you. A game, making it a game almost.
Yeah, no, that's the only reason I got Strava was to log my runs.
So you're still at least keeping a little bit fit there?
A little bit. Like at the beginning of lockdown, we have like a really cool yard that's on a wine farm. So we could still run like in between the vines. So we created this challenge called the Wine Ladder, and it was like about 3 kilometers if you ran like in between all of the vines. And we were running like every day, and it was like this big competition who could run the fastest. And it lasted for me like about 3 weeks, and then now I'm back to running like once a week.
At least you're doing once a week, eh? Like once a week during a pandemic seems pretty good to me. Like that's also like what I've been trying to do, is just qualify like every sentence with "in a pandemic," like, because that's also what you gotta remember. It's like I did all these things in a pandemic, so it just changes the whole outlook, I think, a little bit, because we can't be hard on ourselves.
It's
important, you know, to try and utilize time when you've got it, because for a lot of us, we do have time off in a weird way. Like, because, yeah, like you say, you're not. But that's also the thing, is then we've got this pressure to, like, improve, because you're, like, you also feel bad because you're wasting all this time. You're like, I'm not. And you see other people doing stuff. But everyone else is going crazy as well. It's just on the day you're going crazy, you're seeing them do dope stuff.
Yeah, it's a cycle. And Instagram can be the devil sometimes, because it's like people only publicize the good things they do. Nobody's publicizing the day that they didn't wake up until 1 p.m. Like, you're not trying to post a selfie and be like, ooh, just woke up, 1 p.m. but yet everybody has those days. And the more you have conversations with people, you realize, like, nobody's being, like, consistently productive. Everybody has that day where they just don't feel like doing anything, or they don't have the strength to, like, be productive.
Yeah, and it's... Like, and that's the thing, it is so important for everyone just to know that you're not alone in this, even though you're looking around you and there's literally no one around.
Exactly.
I'm actually gonna, unfortunately, I think we have to cut this one short just because of the connection issues and that. It is cutting out quite a lot. But I think we can do a follow-up interview, like, either in a few months or after the whole COVID situation. And yeah, I do want to ask you, given the current circumstances and everything, and us talking about dreams and stuff like that, what does the Red Robin dream look like at the moment?
I have still so many big dreams for my own life and for some of the things that I feel like God's placed in my heart. And right now, I'm just thinking about putting like building blocks in place so that when COVID, if things are ever normal again, then I'm ready to run with all of the visions that I've started to talk about with my new manager. So I want to get onto international circuits when things open up again. I mean, my dream is to just take my guitar and travel and share love with everyone all over the world. That's always been my number one dream for Red Robin, is to take my guitar, take love, and give it to everyone wherever I can across the globe. So that's the foundation of every dream that I have that sits in my head. And yeah, I mean, from there, I'd love to start a foundation for young girls. I'd love to have one day an orphanage for young girls. I definitely feel akin to young women who have been sexually abused, and I definitely want to take that message everywhere and show people that you don't have to be trapped and you can speak about that stuff and you don't have to feel like ashamed about it. I mean, there are so many
really there are lots of foundations, but we need more. I had like a situation this week just where we came across a young girl who had, been in a situation, and just trying to find her help was really difficult. Like, genuinely calling the gender-based violence hotline and stuff like that's not the most helpful stuff, unfortunately. So more foundations are very, very much necessary, I think. And just if people can't support the ones that they know of, that's also, very important.
Yeah, just having a safe space for young women to go to in times like that, because I know how that feels. But yeah, I mean, I think the foundation of everything I believe in and everything I want for the world and for my own life is just love and peace. And channel everything through that. I think I've lost the dream of trying to be Britney Spears, and I think I do still want to play big stages one day, but not for the same reasons that I used to.
I feel you there so hard. Oh man, this has been such a cool conversation, Ash. I really appreciate your time. I'm really looking forward to getting to follow up and seeing, maybe in a little while when you have toured the world a bit, we can catch up again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hopefully soon. But I think we're still gonna have to hold tight for a while. I personally, I don't think I'm gonna get to perform this year, put it that way. Like, I don't think I'm gonna see. It's just hopefully at another stage in time we can do these things. If not, there are other things that we can do. So that's one of the most beautiful things about this life. But thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Bob. Thanks for having me.